started last week. For those that didn't come, let me give you like a 30-second recap, that we saw the reality of the life that Joseph is born into, that he is this amazing man of faith, but actually he's born into a family of real dysfunction. But the dysfunction doesn't stop God calling him. In fact, God calls Joseph despite the dysfunction. And so we explored that a little bit last week, and we saw how God's purposes don't always go according to our plan, that Joseph steps out and shares this dream that he's had. As he shares this dream, what happens is his brother, the jealousy of his brothers is, instead of them actually bowing down to him, they throw him into a pit. And what we saw then was that actually, as Joseph's brothers sell him off to traveling tradesmen and he becomes a slave, what we see there is that sometimes God's directing can feel like a detour. Because it's not gone to our plan, we think, oh my goodness, what's happened? And actually God is directing something, but it looks like a detour. And actually what he's doing is he's weaving his story into all that's taking place. And so what we see at the end of Genesis 37 is that Joseph is now being sold to these traveling tradesmen who are going to take him to a city called Egypt. Now, Egypt was really significant because Egypt is this city where there's actually a leadership structure in place. And it has influence in the area around him, the whole of that region. And so Joseph is now actually finding himself in a place where there is the potential to have influence, where there's leadership. But he is a slave, so it's not going according to his plan, but God is working something. And so as we start Genesis 39, which is where we're going to be this morning, if you've got a Bible, that's where we're going to be. We've got some sermon note paper, so if that helps anybody, that's at the Connect Point. If you haven't got a Bible and you'd like one, I'm sure we've still got some at the Connect Point. You can grab one of those and have that for yourself. It'll also come up on the screen, and there it is. So let me just read the first six verses of Genesis 39. It says, "Now Joseph had been brought down to Egypt." There he is. "And Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard, an Egyptian, had bought him from the Ishmaelites who had brought him down there. The Lord was with Joseph, and he became a successful man. And he was in the house of his Egyptian master. His master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord caused all that he did to succeed in his hand. So Joseph found favor in his sight and attended him. And he gave him overseer of his house and put him in charge of all that he had. From the time that he made him overseer in his house over all that he had, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. The blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in house and field. So he left all that he had in Joseph's charge, and because of him, he had no concern about anything but the food he ate." Sermon this morning, I want to call God Works in the Shadows. God works in the shadows. I wonder, has anyone been to the theatre? Any theatre goers in church this morning? Good, some nice, hands up. Been recently? Yeah. Oh, you went Friday, nice. A timely little illustration then. I don't know if you've been to the theatre. I mean, Stratford is quite well known for the theatre, if you didn't realise. A guy called Shakespeare put it on the map. He's quite well known, and people travel from all around the world just to come and see his performances. And over the decades, there's been some incredible performances at the RSC. I've been privileged to be able to see some of them, and they're phenomenal. But I wonder if you've noticed in the theatre that usually it's the actors that get the spotlight. It's the actors that are the ones that get the applause. They might acknowledge others, but it's almost like they're being very gracious and just kind of acknowledging it, like deflecting the applause to them off to somebody else. It's them that get the recognition. They're the ones that we kind of flick through the program to see if we've seen them in anything that we might recognize. It's the actors that get the spotlight and the applause. They're the ones we remember. But the real magic of theater doesn't just happen in the spotlight. If you've ever been backstage of a theater, been able to be backstage a few shows. Never done the RSC, actually. I like to go backstage at the RSC, see how that works. But my mum's done the tour around, and she's like, it was incredible just seeing how all of it works. And what we see backstage is there's a whole world of things going on there that make it work. There's a whole world of work going on in the shadows. There's stage managers calling cues. There's costume designers doing last-minute fixes. There's lighting crews shifting to make the mood change. There's set builders changing things. And it all goes unseen, but it's absolutely essential. And without them, the story can't be told. So often the way that God works, working in the shadows, not always in the spotlight of center stage where everyone can see, but oftentimes he's working in the shadows behind the scenes, moving the story forward in ways that we don't even notice. That's what we see in Joseph's life in Genesis 39. His dream placed him center stage with others bowing down to him. But instead of applause, we find him as a slave in Potiphar's house. So now we see that he is unseen, unnoticed. He's backstage. There's no ovations, no programs, no one cheering him on. Yet the writer of Genesis wants us to make sure that we notice something. And he says something really significant in verse 2. He says, the Lord was with Joseph and he became a successful man. The Lord was with Joseph and he became a successful man. Joseph at this stage is a slave. He's living as a slave. He's working as a slave. He's far from home. He's been betrayed by his brothers. He's living in somebody else's house. From a human perspective, there is very little about Joseph's life that we would say he's successful. That we would look at him and go, now there is the example of success. And yet we see here the Lord was with Joseph. Something we see about that is that God's presence isn't dependent on a circumstance or a position. We don't have to have made it to a certain place in order for God to dwell with us and be with us. Even in places where we feel forgotten, in places where we seem like nobody notices us, where there's struggles and nobody understands, and it's seasons where it feels small and ordinary, and if even that on a good day, it doesn't mean that God isn't with us. Joseph is a slave, far away from the dream that God had given him, but God's presence is there because God is working in the shadows. Church, your worth isn't measured by the applause or the promotion or the recognition. God is there with you in the hidden moments, in the ordinary, mundane moments. The same God that we're said in the text here that is with Joseph is with you. It says the Lord was with Joseph, and it says that he was a successful man. I wonder what you think of when you hear that word successful. How do you define success? Maybe it's you've got the job of your dreams. Maybe it comes with that nice large salary. Maybe it's about power and influence. Maybe you've got a life that if I'm successful, that when I say jump, others say how high. Maybe that's the definition of success. Maybe it's the letters after your name. Maybe it's the success in whatever it is that you have. Those things aren't inherently bad. There's nothing wrong with those things. But they're often how the world defines success, isn't it? When we look at people and we judge whether they're a successful person or not, the reality of this verse is that Joseph is said to have become a successful man, but he is a nobody. He is a slave. He hasn't been promoted as the ruler at this point. He's not been reunited with his family. There is brokenness, dysfunction, and his job really leaves a lot to be desired. Yet he's called a successful man. See, what we see in this verse, right at the start of this chapter, is God's definition of success is different to the world's definition of success. Success in God's eyes is about faithfulness. It's about integrity. It's not about an immediate reward. It's not about a status or a freedom. You can be successful whilst you're a slave, held captive, nothing going the way you want it to. In God's eyes, there's success. Before the promotion, before the breakthrough, before anyone even notices. From a human perspective, there is absolutely nothing remarkable about Joseph and the work that he's doing. And yet we're told the Lord was with Joseph and he was a successful man. So I just want to explore three things this morning as we look at Joseph's life and how he lives into the circumstances and situations he finds himself, and some things that we could look at about our own life. So we're going to be really practical this morning. And my first point from verses 1 to 6 is this, that God's presence makes ordinary work extraordinary. God's presence makes ordinary work extraordinary. With God, the ordinary can become extraordinary. See, it's really easy to look at our life, look at our career or lack of career, look at our influence or lack of influence, and we look at it through the world that the lens of the world, and we will decide, am I successful or not? Have I made it or not? Maybe you're in a job that isn't giving you all that you hoped for, a role that seems unnoticed. Any parents in church this morning? Roles that seem unnoticed? Maybe for you, you're in a season where you feel like your efforts are just fruitless every single time. Joseph's story reminds us that God defines success differently. Maybe you're in part of your life where you're like, actually, I'd define myself as pretty successful. The story of Joseph reminds us that God defines success differently. No matter the status you have or don't have, Joseph's faithfulness in ordinary tasks makes him successful in God's eyes. How? Because our lives become extraordinary when we give him whatever we have. Whether we deem it to be worthy or successful in any way, shape, or form or not, when we offer it to him, something extraordinary can happen. No matter how big or small, successful or unsuccessful it seems, the world measures success by what we accumulate and what we achieve, but God measures it by how you trust him and allow him to work through whatever it is you've got in your hands. And that's the difference. Maybe it's your time, your talents, your energy. Maybe it's the very thing that you despise and you wish was not yours to carry, but God says, I want to do something extraordinary with it. So whether you feel like you've made it in this life or not, the invitation is the same. What do you have in your hands that God can use to reveal himself in and through you to the people in your life? What is it? And instead of despising it or celebrating it or letting it define us, we give it to God. And God does something extraordinary with it. Let's see how Joseph lives this out in verse 3. His master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord caused all that he did to succeed in his hands. So Joseph found favor in his sight and attended him, and he made him overseer of his house and put him in charge of all that he had. From the time that he made him overseer in his house and over all that he had, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. The blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in his house and field. So he left all that he had in Joseph's charge, and because of him, he had no concern about anything but the food he ate. See, when we offer God our work or our lack of work, our relationships or our lack of relationships, our skills or our lack of skills, even in the struggle, the pain, and the brokenness, when we give it to God, he does something beyond ourselves and above what we could possibly imagine. Just like Joseph, our ordinary actions done faithfully and in the presence of God become part of a much larger story that God is writing. Nothing is too small for him to use, and nothing is too big. It's about a faithfulness in whatever we have. Even if the results aren't immediate or visible. Work becomes sacred, not because the task itself is defined as sacred, but because God's presence is in it. Some of you may have heard of a man called Brother Lawrence. Any nods for Brother Lawrence? Brother Lawrence was, he worked in a monastery in France in the 17th century. He wasn't a monk. He hadn't even got that status. He was basically a servant, a kitchen porter. And his task in the monastery was what most of us would call chores. And he would wash the dishes, light the fires, prepare the meals. But he had this amazing ability to look at everything he did with a deep awareness of the presence of God. He wrote a book called Practicing the Presence of God. Great little book. And he saw that all these simple little tasks that he did, these simple little duties, were opportunities to serve God and to be with him. And Brother Lawrence, he wrote this. I have this his quote up on the screen. It says, "We ought not to be weary of doing little things for the love of God, who regards not the greatness of the work, but the love with which it is performed." So much of our world focuses on the thing. If we've got that, then we're happy. If we've not got that, then we're happy. If we've got this thing in our life, then it'll be we've got it. Brother Lawrence reminds us, take your eyes off that and let that thing be the thing that God works in and through in order for us to display him to the world around us. Brother Lawrence's life reminds us that no task is too ordinary for God to use, and that integrity and devotion in hidden moments are actually how God defines success. So when we bring God's presence into the ordinary, it becomes extraordinary. Let's read on in Joseph's story. At the end of verse 6, we see, "Now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance." It's nice to know, isn't it? He's a good-looking chap. know how he feels? Don't laugh. Verse 7. And after a time, his master's wife cast her eyes on Joseph and said, "Lie with me." Oh, no. But he refused. And he said to his master's wife, "Behold, because of me, my master has no concern about anything in the house. And he has put everything that he has in my charge. He is no greater in this house than I am, nor has he kept back anything from me except you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" And as she spoke to Joseph day after day, he would listen to her to lie beside her. He would not listen to her to lie beside her or to be with her. But one day, when he was in the house to do his work and none of the men of the house was there in the house, she caught him by his garment, saying, "Lie with me." But he left his garment in her hand and fled and got out of the house. God's presence makes the ordinary extraordinary. The other thing we can learn from this part of Joseph's story is integrity matters even when nobody's watching. When nobody sees, integrity matters. There's a man called Warren Buffett, one of the richest men in the world. And before he was in any way wealthy at all, as a young boy, he used to deliver and sell newspapers. And there's one account that he tells of a day when he sold a newspaper to someone and he gave that customer too little change. And even though no one was watching, he could have kept that money for himself and no one would have been any the wiser. He actually chose to go back and correct the mistake and give the right amount of change to that person for their newspaper. And Warren Buffett, he says of this moment that it was a real guiding moment for him and a principle that he applied to his life. And the principle was this: integrity matters even when nobody sees. What we see here in Joseph's life is it's taken a pivotal turn. There's been a big shift in Joseph's life. He's entrusted with this full responsibility over Potiphar's house. He's been showing that he's competent and he's trustworthy. Yet with greater responsibility comes greater temptation. And Potiphar's wife repeatedly tries to seduce him. And Joseph faces a choice that actually, it says, no one was in the house. No one would have known the choice that he made. But he refuses and he says, "How then could I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" See, in this moment, we see that integrity isn't about appearances. It's not about rewards. It's not about recognition. I said no, and everybody knows that I said no. It's not about that. It's about who you are when nobody's watching. It's faithfulness to God, not applause from people. And Joseph says in this moment, "How could I do this wickedness, great wickedness and sin against God?" And I read that, and I'm like, really? Like, okay, sinning against God, fine. What about Potiphar? Like, I mean, it's a sin, okay, if you were to do that. But surely it's a sin against Potiphar. It's his wife. Like, why is Joseph suddenly said, "I'm not going to do it against God"? Surely the integrity is, "I'm not going to do this because she's married to him." But instead, Joseph says that he'd be sinning against God. See, Joseph sees his integrity as primarily not about obeying human rules or avoiding punishment. It's rooted in his relationship with God. God is present in every single part of Joseph's life. We can see that throughout this story. And so what we see in this moment is he even sees his actions as something that would impact that relationship with God. Not because God is up there going, "I'm going to get you. If you do that, you naughty little boy, I'm going to smack you one." That's not what he's saying. What he's saying is Joseph's love for God shapes how he lives into the world. Joseph's not trying to impress God. He's living integrity because he belongs to God. That's a huge difference. He's not living for the affection of God. He's living from the affection of God. So why on earth would I want to do this? His choices are guided by loyalty to God rather than convenience, fear, or public opinion. And Joseph's no is consistent whether there's anybody watching or not, because his character is shaped by faith and loyalty to God. This question might get a little bit close to the bone, okay? But it's something to dwell on. Where in your life do you feel the pull to take shortcuts or compromise when it seems like nobody's watching. Maybe cutting corners at work, exaggerating achievements on some kind of report or CV. Maybe it's taking the easiest route in parenting. Maybe it's being less patient and kind when people from church aren't around. Maybe it's watching or engaging stuff that we know we shouldn't. Where are we looking at cutting corners? Not because of guilt, but in order to come back to God. And let those moments of temptation be the invitation to be present with God. There's the moment. That's the invitation. And Joseph's example reminds us that faithfulness isn't just for dramatic moments or high-stakes situations. It matters in the small, everyday choices that we have. Living with integrity in the ordinary parts of our life, being honest, showing kindness, honouring commitments, is how our ordinary lives become sacred spaces of faithfulness. That's what happens in those moments. Just so you're aware, Sarah has blacked out. She has these blackouts. We've had it before in church. She'll come round. We'll just give her a bit of space, but she's doing all right. So she's going to be a little bit sparked out because suddenly she's like, I don't know where I am. So just give her a moment just to come round. So what we see there in those moments is those acts of faithfulness are significant. And I would love to say to you that act with faithfulness, act with integrity, and everything will go the way you want it to. I would love to be able to preach that this morning. But you know what? I can't because I'm bound by this book. And those of you that believe, if I just do the right thing, God will bless me in as much as everything will go the way I want it to, then you need to go back to this and read it properly. Because actually, what we see is not I do the right thing equals God blesses me. What we see is an invitation into relationship. So let's just look at Joseph's story. Joseph makes a run for it. He's faced false accusations and he runs. And it says in verse 13, and as soon as he saw that he had left his garment in her hand and had fled out of the house, she called to the men of the house and said to them, see, he's brought among us a Hebrew to laugh at us. Blame a husband and the Hebrew boy. He came in to lie with me and I cried out with a loud voice. And as soon as he heard that I lifted up my voice and cried out, he left his garment beside me and fled and got out of the house. Then she laid up his garment by her until his master came home. And she told him the same story, saying, the Hebrew servant whom you brought amongst us came in to lie with me. But as soon as I lifted up my voice and cried, he left his garment beside and fled out of the house. As soon as his master heard these words and his wife spoke to him, this is the way your servant has treated me. His anger was kindled. And Joseph's master took him and made Joseph's life absolutely perfect. And it all went well on from then on. Joseph's acted integrity. He's fled. But actually, that's not what it says. It says, and Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. And he was there in prison. Third thing that we see from Joseph's story that helps us live into the story of God is this. Faithfulness doesn't always feel fair. Faithfulness doesn't always feel fair. See, from Joseph's perspective, he must have been going, hang on a minute, God. What on earth is going on here? I have done the right thing. I have said no when I meant to have done. Surely everything's meant to go right now. And actually he finds himself in prison. Because so often we see faithfulness as a transaction. We go, I am good, I behave, I obey, God will bless. That's how it works, God. We know the deal. That's the balance. It's all going to be fine. And when I say God bless, what actually we mean is, God, you're going to improve my life and it's going to be an upward curve to the right. But faithfulness is not a transaction. It is a relationship of trust. God is forming us. Even when it feels unfair, God is forming us. And what we see in Joseph's life is that faithfulness doesn't always lead to the immediate blessing that we would like to receive from God. Sometimes faithfulness makes life harder. Maybe you've done the right thing. Maybe you've been honest. Maybe you've served faithfully. Maybe you've resisted temptation, but it has cost you friends, opportunities, comfort. Maybe that's the reality of your story. That's exactly the reality of Joseph's story. He does everything right, and instead of improvement, he faces imprisonment. And what does that teach us? It reminds us to stay rooted in who we are because of who God is, not because of what happens to us. Our identity is not based on our circumstances, our success, or other people's opinions. It is grounded in the unchanging love of God that you belong to, who calls you his child, who says your worth is secure because of who I am, and I accept you and I love you no matter what goes on in your life. And here's the confirmation we see in this moment of Joseph's story. Joseph is thrown into prison for something he didn't do. In Genesis 39:21, it says, "But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him his steadfast love." Even in the darkest, most unfair places, Joseph isn't abandoned. God is present, he is faithful, and he is working in ways that Joseph cannot see and cannot perceive. Because God works in the shadows. It's where God does some of his best work. And the pain that we may go through and the prisons we may find ourselves in are not punishment. They are not proof that God hates us. They are not evidence of his abandonment. In Potiphar's house and in the prison, behind the scenes, there was no applaud, but God was shaping Joseph. God was present and he was active, because we are not defined by what happens to us, but the God who is with us. And you know the promise of the God who is with us? Matthew 28, when Jesus commissions the disciples and says, "Go therefore into all the world." Is it going to be easy? No. Are you going to probably face prison? Yes. But guess what? I am with you to the very ends of the age. That is the promise of Jesus to all of us that follow him, his unending presence. God is present and he is active, and he does some of his best work in the shadows, where he's forming us, protecting us, opening doors that we cannot see. And we sing songs about trust, but those moments are the evidence and the litmus test of whether we actually do trust him. So when you find yourself in those seasons that feel like prison, or when your faithfulness seems to cost more than it gives, remember, the absence of recognition is not the absence of God. He is at work in unseen places, and his presence makes the shadows sacred. And so what we see at the end of Genesis 39 in Joseph's life is that he's still in prison. But the prison guard will start to notice his character and give him responsibilities. Joseph hasn't been freed. He's not been vindicated. He's still in the shadows. And yet the very last words of Genesis 39, there is an unmistakable presence of God where it says the Lord was with him, and whatever he did, the Lord made it succeed. It's the heart of the story. It's the heart of our story. Even in the hidden, unfair places, God is quietly at work, shaping Joseph, building trust and preparing the way for what is to come. Success in God's eyes does not mean escape from the shadows, but faithfulness in the midst of them, because God is working there. Amen. As we're going to come and take communion, and Tom's going to lead us in communion in a few minutes, and I wonder if the band want to come up and just start to play as we get ready for communion. But one of the things that we're doing in this talk is we want to land each week really practically with an invitation. And so we have something called a rhythm of life here, which is four directions or relationships that sum up our life. The up, the in, the out, and the down. The up is our relationship with God, with our values of prayer and worship. The in is our relationship with each other as the church, through our values of family and learning. Out is our relationship with those that don't yet know Jesus, through mission and hospitality. And down is the relationship with ourself, through rest and celebration. Now, that's all well and good as something on a piece of paper. But what we then do is we say, how can we start to live into this? What can that start to look like as we practically start to step into God's story each and every day? And so what we're going to do during this talk is we're just going to give you some ways that you can connect with it if you'd like to. And so on this next slide is just around our values of prayer, family, hospitality, and rest. Just some ways that you could do this week, where you could begin each day with with our prayer value by giving it to God and just praying, Lord, I give you the ordinary of today, make it extraordinary in your presence. That's just a simple prayer you could pray each day. For our family in value, share hospitality in your small group. Share honestly in your small group or with a trusted friend in church about a place where you find it hard to stay faithful when nobody's looking. Maybe that's an opportunity just to pray for each other. Challenging place of vulnerability and honesty, but it's where those family ties are strengthened. Out as we reach the world, invite a neighbour or co-worker or classmate just into an ordinary space. Share a meal, have a coffee, just a simple kindness. Integrity and presence open door for mission. Just a way we can step in through what we've explored this morning in this part of Joseph's story. Maybe you're in a season that's just like a whirlwind, and actually the invitation is towards rest. And you can just take a Sabbath rest, just an hour or a few hours, where you don't strive to measure success. Instead, you rest in the truth that God is at work, even in the shadows. Something practical that we can do to live out the reality and step into this story. So just as we come and take communion, remember God's presence makes the ordinary extraordinary. Integrity matters even when nobody sees, and faithfulness doesn't always feel fair. God's presence is not tied to our position, whether we are in a palace or a prison. His work is not on hold. God does some of his best shaping in the shadows, where he's chiseling our character, building resilience, preparing us for all that he has. What Joseph couldn't know, that in that prison was the very place that God is going to open the door for the next bit of the story, which we'll be exploring next week. Tom, will you come and lead us in communion?
Thank you, John.